I do want to welcome all of you here. We have a few people visiting with us, so let me just catch you up to what we're doing. We are working through lists of things in the Bible. We are working today on some lists suggested by a workbook put together by a fellow by the name of T.W. Hunt with the help of a man by the name of Claude King. The workbook is called The Mind of Christ. A few people have gotten copies of it and are working through that, and I do commend that to you. The first list out of that book that we're working on is a list that comes from James 3:17. This is a list of terms that describe characteristics of Jesus, and we are studying the words in that list. The list is here: pure, peaceable, gentle, entreatable, merciful, fruitful, steadfast, and honest. And we're working this morning with the word fruitful. When we finish that, we're going to go into another list of words out of Galatians called fruit of the Spirit. When we finish that list, we're going to go to the Beatitudes. When we finish that list, we're going to pant real hard and think about what we're going to do next. So I think this morning I want to do something in this hour a little different from what I did in the first hour. In the first hour, I worked a little bit with synonyms and then did some other things. I think I want to do those things first. But again, in the spirit of letting you know where this is going, Jesus said at one point that he called us to find and follow the narrow way. There's a broad way that lots of people find. There's a narrow way that few people find. And for the purposes of this discussion, we're defining that narrow way as a way that follows these words or these terms. Satan in his work is going to try to pull us away from that. If he can pull us away, he's going to pull us to something that opposes or is opposite to that. So we're going to examine what some things would be that would be opposite to these words. Today's word is fruitful. But if Satan isn't successful at pulling us to the opposite, sometimes Satan tries another tact, which is to push us past. That's the idea of a narrow way. You can fall off on either side, push us past this into a perversion of this term. And put us there. Either one would take us away from the straight and narrow path that the Lord has called us to. So I'd like to take you first to John chapter 15. John chapter 15. If you have a Bible, try to find that. If you see somebody near you who either doesn't have a Bible or is struggling to find that, you give them a little help. Somebody gave you some help when you first came in here probably. John chapter 15. What's the setting for these words? Where was Jesus, do we think, when these words were spoken? You remember? Do you know? It's a good thing I asked the question then, isn't it? Anybody know? Probably in the upper room, probably at the Last Supper. John gives us a much bigger picture of that than any of the other Gospels do. And these are words that we believe Jesus said to his disciples in the upper room. Who was with him in the upper room? The disciples. How many were there? 12. What did it look like? It was a long table. Jesus was in the middle. There were three disciples here, one of them looking like this. Right? Why do we think that's what it looked like? The picture was painted on the wall. Okay? Is that the picture that's on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel? No. Did the pastor, the fellow who spoke this morning, did he mention the Sistine Chapel? Okay. Did any stray thoughts come into your mind that distracted you from the worship service at that moment?
Yeah,
Michelangelo
lying on his back
painting. Okay, what came into my mind was a cartoon strip that I read this week. I think it was in Thursday's paper. It was in the cartoon strip Zitz. There's a character in the cartoon strip Zitz named Pierce. Do you know why Pierce is named Pierce? When the young teenager first met him, Jeremy, I think his name is, when he first met him, this kid is covered with tattoos. He has rings and studs and all this kind of thing all over the place. And says, "Hi, my name is Jeremy." The other guy says, "Hi, my name is Pierce." And Jeremy says, "I could have guessed that." So Jeremy says to Pierce in this cartoon strip this week, which of your body art are you the most proud of? And he said, well, I had the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel reproduced on the roof of my mouth. And then he says, there are some people who genuflect and kneel when I yawn. And so this morning when they made reference to the Sistine Chapel, that... Now, all that is completely irrelevant to what I was asking. We have this picture of what that room looked like. It probably didn't look like that. We have this picture that there were 12 disciples in there, but Scripture doesn't say that for sure. It tells us about one or two who were there, ones who spoke. We learned something last week. If you weren't here, you didn't learn this yet, so here's your chance. At the tail end of Luke 7, going into Luke 8, and especially the first few verses of Luke 8, we found out something. When Jesus was wandering around the countryside, visiting this village, visiting this place, teaching here, healing there, who went with him? Our picture is the 12 disciples went with him, and that's probably true. But what did we learn in Luke 8? Women going with him too, and possibly other men besides the 12. So in the upper room, the 12 were almost certainly there. It's possible there were a few other people as well. And whatever that room looked like, whoever the people were who were present, these were words that Jesus said. Ready? First verse. I am the true vine. My Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that bears no fruit, what happens to that branch?
Lots and all.
Cut away, mine says. Does your translation say locks off?
Lock them off.
Lock them off? That's a great translation. I'll have to look at that. Every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes. Prunes in this case does not have to do with dried fruit. What is pruning as a gardening term of this sort?
Cutting back.
Cutting back. So locked off or cut back. Is it pleasant to be cut back? Well, we don't know if vegetables and plants have feelings, so maybe that's an unanswerable question, but it doesn't look very pleasant, right? Garden shears, pieces cut off. Something is happening to every branch. No fruit, cut off. If it bears fruit, pruned. Pruned why? So it'll bear more fruit. Okay? This word fruitful is this word bearing fruit, and so we got to find out what the fruit is. That's the quest that we're on here for a minute or two. Verse 4, remain in me as I in you. A branch cannot bear fruit all by itself unless it remains part of the vine. Neither can you unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever remains in me, with me and him, bears fruit in plenty. For cut off from me, you can do nothing. Come down to verse 14 for just a moment. The target verse is verse 16. I'm starting at verse 14. You are my friends. If what? If you obey me. If you do what I command. Mine says if you do what I command you. Verse 15. I will no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. I call you friends. Why? Because I've made everything known to you. Everything I've learned from my Father. Verse 16, here's our target verse. You did not choose me. No, I chose you. And I commissioned you to do what? To go out. And mine says, bear fruit. And then mine has a comma, and it says one more little phrase. Does yours have a comma and a little more phrase? What's it say? Fruit that will last. Fruit that won't spoil, one translation in the first hour said. Okay? And the next word I have is, I have these two words, so that or in order that. Do yours have something like that? In order that or so that what? Whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he'll give it to you. So what's the fruit that he's talking about?
Grapes?
I don't think so. He's talking about vines, so that certainly sounds like the metaphor is grapes. But that's not the fruit he's talking about.
Love?
Could be.
It's
not, but could be.
Spirit?
That's the next thing we're going to go to, right? Fruit of the Spirit?
Yeah.
The fruit of the Spirit, this is, I can pull the sign back out if anybody insists on it. The fruit of the Spirit is not this. The fruit of the Spirit is what the Spirit produces in us to enable us to produce our fruit. How did you come into the building today? Jenny, how did you enter the building? What door did you use? Over off of Buford? Okay, so you came in that way. What door did you use?
The one that,
comes in by the commons. Okay. When you came, all of you were in the commons, or many of you were in the commons for worship, right? When you came here, did you come through that lobby area?
Mm-hmm.
There's something written on the wall in the lobby area. That's sort of a motto or a plan of action for our church. Every week that you walk down through that space, you pass that. Have you read it lately? Anybody know what it says?
Proclaiming the grace of God.
And then there's a space. And then growing followers of Christ. Okay. Here's my contention. The fruit that Jesus is talking about falls between those two. The fruit that Jesus is talking about falls between those two. What is intended to be the consequence of proclaiming the grace of God? Lives will be changed. People will come to a saving faith in Him. And when they have come to a saving faith in Him, what needs to happen? They need to grow into full, mature followers of Christ. The fruit that He's talking about, I believe, stands in our motto in between the first half and second. We proclaim the grace of God so as to let people know who need to know. If they come to a relationship with the Lord as a result of that, which we hope will happen, they then need to be nourished and helped to grow. That's sort of what fruit does, isn't it? It comes for a reason, and then when it's come, it grows. Remember that phrase, fruit that will last? That's the second half of our motto, I think. How are you doing so far? I'm supposed to ask that once a day, right? I want to try one more thing, and I'm going to go from Jeff to Jan. So that's going to split Sally and David. That's going to split you two. I want this half of the group over here, and Jeff, why don't you go with this half? I want you guys to look up 2 Kings 19. And from Jan and Sally around this way, I want you guys to look up Isaiah 37. You guys are looking up 2 Kings 19. That's back before Psalms. It's one of the history books back before Psalms. You guys are looking up Isaiah 37. That's the first big book of prophecy. It's on the New Testament side of Psalms and Proverbs. Okay. Down 2 Kings 19. Find verse 30. You guys over here looking for Isaiah 37? Find verse 31. Okay. Now those over here who have a translation that has the word below and above, does your translation have those two words in that verse? Okay, then I want one of you to read in just a second. All right? Do you guys, in your translation, do you have the word above and below? Somebody who has those two words in your translation, I want you to read in just a moment. Everybody ready? Somebody over here, read your verse first. Sarah, you have it?
Mm-hmm. Once more, a remnant of the house of Judah will take root below and bear fruit above.
What does your verse say? Somebody who has this. What does it say?
Once more, a remnant of the house of Judah will take root below and
bear
fruit above.
Okay. That's the same verse. Why is that? Because the prophets lived while the histories were being written. Over in the book of 2 Kings, they're quoting the prophet Isaiah. The prophet Isaiah quotes himself, or the person writing about his work quotes him. That's the same verse. What does it say about fruit? In order to bear fruit above ground, the picture is the fruit is being born. These aren't potatoes we're talking about, right? You can have oranges and lemons and nectarines. You can have apples and pears and pomegranates, I suppose. We're not talking tubers here. Okay, so in order to have fruit above, what do you have to have? Fruit below. Okay. When Jesus talked about it, he said, in order to produce fruit at the branches, what do you have to have? a connection to the vine. They're both talking about the same thing. In order for the place where the fruit is being formed to work, it has to have a source of nourishment, a connection. In the one metaphor, you're talking about just a plant, roots below, fruit above. In the other case, you're talking about a specific kind of plant, production of grapes, with vines provided. If you're not connected to the vine with solid, if you're not putting down roots, the fruit's not going to come. What's the fruit? Changed lives. People coming to a saving relationship and growing into mature and active and fruitful disciples. Okay? Now, with that as a background, let's go after, first of all, some synonyms. And then after we work on that, or as we work on that, we're going to look for what's Satan going to try to pull us to for the opposite. And if Satan's not too successful in pulling us away from that this way, then Satan may push us beyond. This is God's narrow way down here in the middle. What are some synonyms? If you've got the workbook, some of you may have a word or two to suggest. Don't suggest them all. It's more fun to have them come out slowly. What are some words that might go with fruitful?
You almost have to say connected.
That's certainly how you would be fruitful, given the things we just read.
What else?
Plentiful.
Plentiful.
Okay. I heard somebody in the first hour say bountiful, which is a very similar kind of word.
Productive.
Several people were suggesting it once. Now, that's a pretty good one to go over to this list with, right? If you say productive on this list, what might you put on the opposite list?
Unproductive.
Okay, any other synonyms come to mind?
Barren.
Are you looking at opposites or are you looking
opposite?
Yeah. Barren might be a word here. One of the words used here was fertile, which might match up pretty well with that. Okay. T.W. Hunt doesn't use this word, although I think it's a wonderful word that really begins to express it. He uses the word fruitless. Fruitless, sort of picking up on this one up here. I think the word barren catches a bit more of what we're talking about. What else?
Effective. Transformation.
Effective. What was yours?
Transformational.
Yeah, the chemist in me wants to sort of morph that word into catalyst or catalytic. That you become an agent for change. You're not the cause of the change, but your presence might enable the change to take place. In the first hour, we all agreed it needed to go in here, and in the spirit of what we just talked about today, that connection between the fruit and the vine is the branch. And what we're doing is we're taking nourishment and passing nourishment on. And so, nourishing came in our minds anyway in that middle word, in that middle section. T.W. Hunt tosses in this word, which somebody said in the first hour it sounded like they were talking about the stock market.
High yield.
Okay. Now, I have to admit, I thought about this one, but not in quite that context. But I was thinking about an opposite over here. Now, there's one opposite that's easy. What's that? Low yield. That's the easy one. Right? Low or no yield. But I think there's another one that goes up that preserves the high, but puts a very different spin on it. First hour, I didn't see what I was talking about until I said it. I doubt this is going to go anywhere if I don't just show you. But check, see if this works for you. It works for me. High maintenance. The somebody who is high yielding, as opposed to somebody who is high maintenance. Somebody who is high yielding, all their energy goes into productivity. Somebody who's high maintenance, where does energy go? Sucked in like a black hole, right? All your energy gets pulled in. I don't mean that to aim at anybody in particular, but I think that term. And if you put this term over here, what might go over here? Low maintenance. Meaning people in this category are probably going to be easy to work with. It's amazing how productive my department can be when we have a meeting of part of the department. We have a meeting this week. Somebody at the meeting said, why can't we be the ones? We'll just make all the decisions. Right. I felt like having one of those staple buttons there. Have you seen those staple buttons? That was easy. I don't have one yet. I just get one.
How about consuming?
Over here? Yeah, consuming versus producing. I've got productive down there, so that's probably close enough. Let me see if there's any other. They had some, T.W. Hunt put down a couple of other words, words like worthless, empty, and hollow. And hollow, I think, is the one that sort of jumped out at me. Hollow is the one that jumped out. Now, this is a little bit more difficult because T.W. Hunt takes you to a very specific place, right? He takes this. And I think appropriately so. The most likely people to ever read his workbook are people who are already in a church and are already affiliated with a church and trying to work within a church setting. What's the perversion that comes within a church where this one's concerned? What's the perversion that comes?
Obsessed with numbers.
My church is bigger than yours. I've got more this than you. I've got more that than you. And what hides behind that? T.W. Hunt doesn't go here, but pride and vanity sort of stand behind those. Now, T.W. Hunt did put another term. I think it's talking about the same thing. Over here is fruitful. Over here is fruitless. Over here is focused on fruit. That's not quite the way he worded it. How did he say it? Yeah, he just said fruit-obsessed. Fruit-obsessed. He picked up your two words. And then he said success. And hiding behind all of this is, why is the fruit being produced? And there's a metaphor here. I've used it before. I'm going to keep using it until everybody in the room knows it, and then I'll probably keep doing it because we might have a visitor the next week. Do you know the difference between a battery and an extension cord? Which one are Christians supposed to be like? The person who prays, Lord, fill me with your power so I can go over here and do some good. Is the words of the prayer sound like, make me a battery. You give me some power, and then I'll just go away from you, and I'll go over here, and I'll have the power I need to do something. And I think Scripture always says, where Christians go, you got a hand on the power source, you got a hand on the problem, and things go through. That picture of the vine and the branches, you remain connected to the vine, and you're connected to the fruit of the possibility of fruit, and then the nourishment goes, all kinds of things go. Right? So the idea is, when you get over here, you're starting to think all of these things are happening because of me.
It goes back to selfish.
Uh-huh. And there's a pretty large pile of things that are a little hard to word, I think, hiding over there, but they're very, very real. They're very, very real. They're a constant concern to folks.
A word that comes to mind is works or human works.
Yeah, that's. I was trying to find a word to say that.
Work.
Yeah, you might run into one variation on this. Might be somebody's going to say, "Well, if I just worked a little harder, the church would be stronger."
Yeah.
I'll just take on two more committee assignments, or I'll go to five more meetings, and the church will be stronger. And the church might be stronger if you didn't go to those meetings. Maybe.
I don't know whether it applies to me in this sentence, but I wonder about the spiritual. I get the impression of colorful and attractive.
What a wonderful word to put up here. D.W. Hunt didn't go anywhere near that. Were people attracted to Jesus? You bet they were. Why? There's about six answers you can give to that. There's one I think that rises above the others, but the others are still valid.
Well, he
healed people. You know, I need healing. I go to Jesus because he heals people. But there was another thing that was expressed more than once. That's probably a big one for a lot of people. Yeah. The one that I remember was, he didn't teach the way everybody else taught. He spoke with authority, unlike described. And phrases like that where he was coming from some place that they hadn't seen anybody come from. And yes, he was being himself and some of these things that were there. Yes, there was power there that might be desired for that. Just, I need healing, come heal me. But we hear this other creeping in that there's something different about him, and I don't know what it is, but I want to be around him to see if I can find out. And so absolutely, and Bobby, that's very insightful. We can get that in the first hour. There's an attractiveness that's here that I think goes away on this side, and I think it goes away on that side.
And although he was a supreme judge, he wasn't judgmental.
Yeah, how did he pull that off?
Again, I think he was found doing his father's will all the time. So it was not, that's the authority thing. They knew there was an authority here. But yet he wasn't the one trying to bring glory or attention or any of that to himself. And it kind of comes back in on the showiness of the other side. And yet it's the connection again to the bond.
I think I've got enough time to take you down a road for 4 minutes. Let's see if we can go there. I had a discussion after Sunday school was over, actually a discussion by email a week or two ago with someone. And I had read you the story about Jesus at the Pharisees' dinner party and the woman who first cried on his feet and then tried to dry the feet with her tears and then anointed them and all that stuff. And you remember in the middle of that it seemed like Jesus could read the Pharisee's heart, could understand what he was thinking. And I made the statement in here,
there are some people who can read body language and do other things like that, and Jesus might have been the best of those that the world has ever seen. And I was taken to task by somebody in the following week. Don't you think Jesus was doing that out of his divinity? Now here was my reply. I said, absolutely he might have been. But if he was doing that out of his divinity, I can't mimic that. But if he was doing it out of using everything he was as a human in line with God's will and beginning to understand who people were by seeing them through God's eyes, I can aspire to mimic that. And the response I got was, okay, I hadn't thought about that. What did Jesus say about himself? He never said, I'm doing these things out of my divine power. What did he say? I'm doing nothing except what I see my Father doing. And he said more than once, I'm doing that, I see what the Father is doing, and I do the same thing. And I'm doing it in his power. And when he said the Father and I are one, one of the pieces that he was talking about, it's not the one we usually focus on, was when the Father is working through me, it's the same as the Father working. And I can aspire to that extension cord model. So when I come back to the back end of this word nourishing becomes really important. Because if I'm not connected to the source of power, roots below equates to fruit above. Connection with the vine says I might be productive. Doesn't guarantee it. I can have roots below it and not. Yeah, but
In the thought of being fruitful, I think we're taught in God's Word to be seed planters, not to worry so much about the harvest, but to be in God's will and share. So I think, along with fruitful, you've got to be have a lot of insight. And I think on the opposite side, you would have some lack of vision.
I'll just put faith and vision up for that. Let me take you two places, but before I do that, you had your hand up and I didn't call
it. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think people were intrigued by his ability to convey the authority and the divinity that was his. But he, throughout the New Testament, it talks about his attitude of servitude and his humility. And he projected possibly a genuine interest and concern and empathy, a total understanding of where each individual in his audience was coming from. They must have been able to sense it in an uncanny way that he knew what each one of those lives looked like. People who were listening,
but somehow never threatening.
Threatening, totally
always
loving,
affirming,
and
welcoming, and attractive. Let me follow up on Bobby's thought for just a second. Find Matthew 13. Find Matthew 13. To give you a head start. I'm there. You there? Verse 1. That same day. What day? Jesus left the house. What house? And sat by the lakeside, but such large crowd gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there. The people all stood on the shore, and he told them many things in parables. I have the picture of a bay, sort of a semicircle, circular bay, the people standing this way, and Jesus in a boat where he could be heard equally by all of them. A sower went out to sow, he said. And as he sowed, some seed fell on the edge of the path, and the birds came and ate that seed up. Comment I would make, Bobby, in yours, that there has to be a little bit of faith that I can scatter seed in even very unlikely places. God might do something with it there. I don't scatter the seed just in the place it's the best. Although if you've ever tried to scatter seed, it's hard to put it only in the place you want. But that's a piece of it. Now I want you to take a look at verse 5 and what I'm calling to mind here is the phrase that Jesus used. I command you to produce fruit, fruit that lasts. Remember that? Other seed, this is verse 5, fell on patches of rock where they found little soil and sprang up at once. But because there was no depth of earth, as soon as the sun came up, they were scorched and not having any roots, they withered away. Others fell upon among thorns. The thorns grew up and choked them. Others fell on rich soil and produced their crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Yeah, there's a parallel here for seeds. That metaphor works in here as well. I saw two hands back in there, Bobby and Paul. Bobby?
I was just going to say that, back to the kind of the previous discussion, that the common denominator of a lot of this is that we see what's good, but the current thing is we want that. I see all this, I'm impressed, it's good, but I want it. You know, I look at Jesus, and many of the people must have said, I want myself with some of what he has. And I think as Christians, that's kind of the measure of some degree of success from others look at us and say, you know, I'm not absolutely certain exactly what it is that I'm looking at, but I want it. I want myself.
Paul?
No, I was just comment on what set Jesus apart to a lot of people. Was that people saw him not as rules driven or rules focused, but as human focused and spirit focused. For example, the Pharisee and the pastor, and when they were at the temple praying, Jesus was there, and the Pharisee was saying, well, I do all these wonderful things, I follow all these rules, so that I'm more so than that. makes me better than anybody else.
Especially this guy here.
In the past there, who was truly cared about his soul and being saved and his relationship with God. And that comes through a lot of times in the Bible. Jesus was very concerned for his people not following the series of rules, but what was going to be in his heart.
How many of you remember the Great Commission? You do, right, Jim? WMU studies that and lives that. Remember how it starts, Matthew 28? First words, go ye, is the translation in King James. A good translation that's come out later, I understand, says as you go. As you go. Where you're going, as you go. What's the second thing? Remember? I think it's make disciples. I thought that was first. I trust your judgment on those things because I didn't look today. I thought the teaching was the third one. And, if I'm right, there's a reason for that.
A former master we had taught us that. He said the Greek word is translated go ye in the Bible, in most Bibles, actually means as you go.
That's what I heard too. As you go, make disciples. What's that? Bear fruit. And as soon as you have people respond, what should your next job be? Mine says, baptize them in the name of the Father. Help them take their first steps of obedience. Because that's really what baptism is. Baptism is obedience to God. Public display of your having come to faith. And then teach them. Teach them what? To observe all the commands that I've taught you. Can I take you back to where we started? John chapter 15. Remember how that first verse that I read? The first verse I read was verse 14. Focus was verse 16, but I started back at 14. What did it say? You're my friends if what? If you do what I command you. Why did I back up to verse 14? It's because after verse 16 comes verse 17. What does verse 17 say? My command to you is what? Love one another. Love being an active verb, calling for action, not a verb of attitude and passion. You're my friends if you do what I command you. What have I commanded you to do? Love one another. Love the ones who are of the household of faith and help them become stronger. Love the ones who aren't. Try to bring them in. Fruit bearing and fruit nourishing are both implied in here. And the word fruitful stands in the middle of that set of things that we've looked at this morning. What's our word for next week? Steadfast. We'll work on that next week. Looks like we're working on the rate of one word a week. Maybe we'll do that for a little while. Let's have a word of prayer as we finish. Our Father, we thank you for the time you give us, and we thank you for the call that you give us to become fruitful in your service. Help us understand that what that means is that we need to be nourished by you so that we have something to share, that we need to measure our resources by the opportunities you give us, and we need to be your hands and your voice in a world that will sometimes respond to us by recognizing you. We pray all these things in your Son's name. Amen.